eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
Welcome back to Eat, Drink, Talk. I'm your co-host with Steve Coombs, and sitting across from me is my co-host Rick Redding. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. I got a full belly. I think this is a nice tradition we have of going out to lunch before we do the show.
That's right. We should talk it up when we do that, too.
That's right. Bluegrass Burgers right down the road on Frankfort Avenue. I had the Angus burger and some baked beans. Had a piece of avocado on it. It was we're making our audience hungry.
That's right. I went for slaw. We are both being good boys today and foregoing French fries.
Passed on the fries.
Our sugar in. Yeah, it was good stuff. we got to learn to do an outside show, too. I mean, it is, what, 80 degrees outside today? I know that's all going to change.
I know.
Come the 4th of July weekend.
We could be al fresco somewhere with a cold beer doing the show. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be ideal. Out in the sun. But that's not happening because this is studio work today. But
so what's on the agenda today?
Had a lot happen last week, including the passing of Nancy Shepherd. And for those who may not know her, she was the co-founder of Cafe Metro and the founder of Uptown Cafe. And I don't know how many years ago, but it was quite a while ago, she had a stroke and was in failing health, but a lot of it due to mobility issues, and it was a byproduct of the stroke, and she finally died. And at any rate, it has been amazing to see on Facebook the outpouring of grief over her loss, because so many in the restaurant community knew her, and honestly, she probably gets far less credit than she deserved in terms of helping the whole Bardstown Road boom take off. I mean, the Bristol was in there first. How do you like that, folks? We have a train coming by. Maybe it's a salute to Nancy.
It's the 12:30 train, I guess.
That's right. That's right. Some guy at the horn there loves Cafe Metro and Uptown Cafe. Nevertheless, she was a pioneer. Not only is a female restaurateur, she and her husband opened the first restaurant, and I believe it was 1984 or 5. It's in my story. He died in a tragic auto accident, and she not only carried on with the restaurant, and it was one of the best in town, period. Very contemporary, very big city cosmopolitan feel for its time. And then she eventually opened up Uptown Cafe, which is in its 30th year now, and the restaurant is operated by her daughter. So, I mean, the legacy that she's left is tremendous.
It's amazing. I didn't know her, and I only went to the restaurants a couple times, but to have that kind of staying power and be successful is it's a tribute to her.
Oh, absolutely. And she was legendarily irreverent. She could peel the wallpaper when she was in the right mood, and she was funny. Just a real joy to be around, and we'll miss you, Nancy.
Apparently,
sure.
She had liked to avoid cameras, right? Because it was really tough to find a picture of her.
The only one that I found was in her obituary, and that was it. And no, I can remember her giving me the stink eye when I pulled out a camera to take a picture of her. I'll throw you out of here, Coombs, if that happens. So I said, yes, ma'am, I'll put that down right now. And she smiled and just, you know, it was implied that that's not going to happen ever. So at the very least, we miss you, Nancy, and so many people do. And thanks for the impact you had on this community. And speaking of other aggressive restaurateurs, how about Carter Lewis?
Carter Lewis and Hillbilly Tea. You told me the story of his failures and maybe limited successes with Hillbilly Tea. So,
well,
he's back.
He's shut down three Hillbilly Tea operations, two in Louisville, one in China or Taiwan. I can't think off the top of my head. And then he promised to set up a Hillbilly Sushi themed restaurant on Chestnut that never came through.
Sounds like an oxymoron.
Well, it could, you know, bluegill, carp, who knows, you know, might be delicious. The chef, David Scales, who was working on the concept with him, said it was a fantastic idea, but it just never took root. And the other thing is he did not open up this promised Portland operation. So he's back in business, however, on Main Street near First Street, and apparently a lot of people are happy about it, and we'll see if he can
First
carry
of Main, on. I'm trying to think, that's got to be right near the Loft Hotel.
I believe so.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because that's right on the corner, and they finally got those dang stanchions down on Whiskey Row, you know.
So. Keeping the whole lot from tumbling into the street. My goodness.
So maybe at some point in the far off future, they're going to open up that lane of traffic so it won't be so bad going through there.
Exactly. I mean, can you imagine being O'Shea's and, gosh, what other businesses?
Yeah, I talked to Tommy about that a few months ago. He was on my other show, and he said, it's amazing we're still here because we haven't had, like, a front door since we opened. You know, so it's those guys have persevered, those restaurants along there. So.
Yeah, that's a testament to what good operators they are, too, to be able to get through that. And so, Rick, so what do you think about this whole Bristol story? I mean, so now we know for sure what we said a couple of weeks ago was that the rumor was Gustavo's, the Mexican Grill out in Crestwood and LaGrange, was going to get that spot where the Bristol got kicked out of.
Well, it doesn't surprise me because every building that houses a restaurant that closes down opens as a Mexican restaurant the next week.
And it stays there for eons. They rarely fail. It's amazing. These people work their brains out to make it happen.
I know. I don't know if it's work ethic or what it is. They don't like construction, apparently, because they like to go in buildings that are already up. But I hate to categorize a whole restaurant class like this, but we got two of them right out where I live in J-Town, Senior Iguanas and El Nopal, that took over buildings that had restaurants that just never made it. And they've been there for years now.
They've thrived. Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Well, this one's a weird one to me because in the restaurant business overall, it's not common to see a really good tenant not get its lease renewed. And it was clear that Kroger was not going to renegotiate with Bristol, which, according to Bristol, they'd never missed a payment. They did great. They were good runners. They took care of the facility. And then Kroger, initially people were thinking, well, if they're going to kick the Bristol out, what kind of a, you know, high-flying operation is going to get to come in there? Because you would think that's serious stuff. And there's Gustavo's, which is fine. I mean, it does well where it is, but I mean, I just would, I'm surprised that Kroger was that excited about getting a pretty young Mexican restaurant company into that space.
I think if you live in Prospect, you probably were hoping for something a little better
than that Bristol there?
Than the Mexican restaurant coming in.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. But that, you know, there's nothing in, well, I mean, Blackstone Grill is actually quite good, but there's nothing very contemporary about it.
Yeah.
So, you would think that in that the most well-heeled community would come up with something a little bit more upscale. But the problem is that many restaurateurs tell me is that rent is very expensive there, and they don't want to get involved. So it's not like people from the city are coming out to set up a place there. Right. I just think they have an axe to grind, so that Kroger has an axe to grind, potentially with HIP Enterprises, which was the company that built the center and sold it to Kroger, and then also sublet that space to the Bristol. It's just, there are too many unexplained answers there.
Must be a personality conflict in there somewhere.
Right. It just, you know, and then this is no diss on Gustavo's. I hope they do great there. I mean, the couple times that I've been to the one in Crestwood, I've enjoyed it, but it just don't make no sense to me. Thank you very much. What other seems, another thing that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense is we got a new pizza concept coming here.
Well, yeah, you can never have too much pizza. And,
apparently not.
I was driving around in Hikes Point, and Hikes Point is sort of a desert for restaurants, I think. I mean, you've got every, you know, up at Breckenridge Lane and Taylorsville Road there, chain, you know, what I put in the story, I put, you know, chain restaurant, grocery, dry cleaner, chain restaurant.
It's
convenience
a formula.
Store, you know, one right after the other. But this Mod Pizza out of Seattle looks like a pretty cool place. They built their own building. It's got a brick facade. There's a picture of it on the site. And
that was such a close-up. I wasn't sure if it was a redo. That is a
actual
ground-up
brick.
Building. Wow.
It's a ground-up
That's
building.
Expensive.
It's in between two banks. And, I mean, you probably can remember. We talk about old restaurants. I can remember a Fazoli's being there, a Burger King being there. I mean, they've had a lot of things on that spot, but they tore everything down and rebuilt from the ground up. So there's some money behind it.
That's expensive. That changes my whole perception of that now that you tell me. Because to go in and build something from the ground up is a seven-figure investment, period.
Yeah. Well, they've got they've also got a billboard up on the road there. They're hiring, so you know, a lot of hiring signs around town. But
yeah.
they're hiring staff there, and I expect they'll be open. You know, it only says coming soon, but
right,
it'll be within a month, I think.
And from what we understand, this is quite a bit like the Blaze concept, in that it's
and Pieology, which is out there on Hurstbourne.
Right, so you stand in line, kind of Subway style, tell them what you want on your pizza, or you get one that's already made. Or designed, and it goes into the gas flame oven, and a couple minutes later you have a pizza. So
it's great because, you know, you can really, you know, it's just because how popular is Subway and how popular is Qdoba, because you get to stand at the window and you get to watch them put the food on, put your food on your pizza.
Do the very work that you won't do at home.
Exactly.
You'll pay exorbitant
costs. I'm not cutting
more.
Up those peppers to put on there.
Good gosh. You know, who knows how many knives I'll have to use. So, yeah, that's... Again, if we didn't say it, it's Mod Pizza. It's all caps, M-O-D, separate word, pizza.
And it's right in front of the, you know, it's like a, they did a $20 million renovation of the Kroger there in Hikes Point.
$20 million.
Yeah.
Wow. They're making a lot of money off cereal, aren't they?
I guess so.
And marshmallows and peanut
butter.
They
tore down, there were a bunch of small stores over there. They tore those down. There used to be all kinds of stuff in there. There was a CC's Pizza in there that was like mediocre. And
that's high praise for CC's.
Yeah, it's really...
Baby,
it was like I was talking about this. It was like, well, it's a lot of food for a small price, but it's really average food.
No, thank God that's
you feel
gone.
Like a cow going to the trough.
Yeah, that was actually one of the larger pizza companies in the country, and it has stagnated for the past 10 years. Terms of its growth, because people are just going, this isn't very good.
There's a lot of it. I don't got care my
how,
choice.
I don't care how little I have to pay. It's not very good. Talk about you know what you were finding out in Indian Springs.
Indian Springs. Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting that nowhere in town that I know of or in my experience has a golf course just gone to seed. And out there at Indian Springs, I played that golf course a few times. The houses were too close to the course. Or
was that more of a comment on your strokes?
Yeah, well, I kept hitting it into people's backyards.
Just playing through, folks. Guys, just keep your seats.
I got to cut my grass here. Will you move your ball? So, anyway, that Indian Springs, for a lot of reasons, basically ceased operations as a golf course, I think maybe 2 years ago. And the people that owned it figured out they could sell that valuable property on Westport Road right across from Springhurst. They immediately put up an Aldi grocery, and now there's a big, like, four-story hotel right there in that area, too. But now there's a couple restaurants coming in.
And one is Martin's Barbecue Joint from Tennessee.
Yeah, you know a little bit about that. There's only like five of them.
Right, and only so much, or insofar that friends of mine from Nashville say it's fantastic and that we should be happy to be getting one. Heaven knows there's, what, maybe 10 barbecue places in town and literally 190 pizzerias. So there's room for growth.
It's not saturated, I don't think.
Yeah.
You're great. Your guy, Chris Williams, last week is a great barbecue place.
Yeah.
Good I think stuff. There's room for more of that.
Oh, I do too. I do, especially on that side of town. I can't think of any barbecue anywhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Multiple neighborhoods over.
So they've got a Panda Express going in there too. So there's a lot of choices if you live out that way to a place to eat.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're working. You got a tip this week, and we're going to be careful about what we say here, but there's some changes coming, we think, to the Oak Room, and we think Eat Drink Talk is going to have a story on that maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, let's hope so. It's this is really something that has gone on for an extended period, and I'm talking multiple years. The Oak Room is fantastic as a restaurant as that is in every aspect. I mean, it's been a five diamond award winner from AAA for I don't know how many years. They got a bunch of trophies out there.
And really there's only what, four or five of those in the whole city, right?
It's the only one that has five diamonds in the entire state. So I don't know how many five diamond winners there are in the country, but it's in an elite class by itself.
Okay.
So the thing about it, though, it's never been busy enough. I mean, and I think I'll confess to being a lazy Louisvillian who thinks, man, so I got to drive down there, give a guy my car. I've got to put on really nice clothes before I go. Then I got to walk up the stairs.
Hit the valet.
All that, as opposed to just, you know, I live in the Highlands. I can walk to a lot of great restaurants in my shorts. Not under shorts, tennis shorts, or, you know, any of those. But I can go casual, let's say. So that's just one of the problems they're having getting locals down there. And then you get in there, and it's an expensive place to eat. Mm-hmm. So it's never terribly busy, even though it's attracted some of the best chefs in the city. Right now, Nick Sullivan is there. Patrick Roney of Harvest was last there. Bobby Benjamin at Butchertown Grocery was there before that. Bottom line is this is about business, and they're struggling to figure out how to make this happen. And we're hearing that they will make it casual-er to try to get this going. More casual. Thank you very much. Good thing I'm a word guy, right?
That's right.
So we're waiting to hear some information on that. Rick has got an interview hopefully set up today post-big marketing meeting to talk to these people, right?
That's the plan. And, you know, again, things can happen in these meetings. You know, it could be that this guy goes in and they say, absolutely no talking about this to anybody anywhere or you're fired, you know. So
right.
I may not hear from him, but I hope I do. I know something's up. He did confirm that, and so something's up.
Right. And I think one of the things in making it more casual, as you said correctly, is that they would step down from that five diamond status. And that's a big deal. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. In this world of ratings, top 10 lists, top 100s, thrill list, all this garbage, this is a serious thing. Not only do they have to have the food and drink correct, they've got to have a certain amount of fresh flowers everywhere, a certain weight of linen, a certain weight to their silverware, a certain density to their glassware. I mean, well, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, stepping down to four diamond, you know they're – how many four diamonds are
there? Well, three, Vincenzo's, Corbett's, and English Grill, all elite restaurants. And, you know, Corbett's, I think Dean Corbett told me some time ago that the one thing that keeps them out of is that he doesn't want to do valet parking. Okay. At the English Grill, they do valet, so does Vincenzo's. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the flowers. I'm not sure. But at some point, they're satisfied with a four diamond status. But the difference between that and the five is a big deal, and it comes down to money.
Mm-hmm.
And can't blame him for wanting to save some of that. So, and especially if he gets guests in the door, which it hadn't been doing.
Right, right. Got something to market and something to appeal to. There's
right.
certainly a lot of people downtown. I tell you, there is a lot going on downtown. It's amazing to see things going up in terms of new things. That Omni Hotel is coming out of the ground.
That's
like gangbusters.
Cool.
And, you know, if you go down to, like, Angel's Envy, you know, the progress
right.
is daily on that thing.
Right.
Right across from the ballpark. So there's a lot of great stuff going on downtown. So they should up their game to take advantage of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. What else we got on? Speaking of upping their game, we've got you especially have – a great interview with an independent restaurateur this week that I like a lot.
Yeah. Well, you introduced me to Danny Mack some many years ago in Clark's Lane. And you know, he's great. He's a simple guy, but he's got, you know, he grew up over there in Germantown, went to St. X. He talks about his very humble background and has always been, had his Danny Mack's restaurant over at the Amvets, post
in Germantown for about three or four years now.
Yeah, and you know, and like a long time, you know, several years ago after my mother passed away, I was getting rid of some stuff, and he came over and bought a bunch of it just for that.
Oh,
for
nice.
The Embets,
I didn't
you know,
know
just
that.
To give to them, and he's just got a big heart, and he's very. you did a great imitation of him, but he doesn't get very excited, but
he's low key.
He is very low key, and his. His experiment, his challenge in going into the Melwood Arts Center is a big task, but he's going at it in a big way.
Yeah, now hopefully he can make it there. The Bristol had a cafe there, didn't turn out well, and La Galarosa went in there.
La Galarosa, he's in their spot.
Right, right. Lasted about 6 months, maybe.
Yeah.
So
I worked in that area for Louisville Mojo, the defunct. Sadly, passed Louisville Mojo.
Right.
It was right next door.
All about that.
And there was never anything good to eat there. So Anyway, Danny's got karaoke. He's got like he told me. There's this Elvis song, Teddy Bear. That's his go-to karaoke song. So a low-key guy like that does karaoke, and he's got a lot of entertainment planned for the Melwood.
He's a good dude, and I do like his pizza. It's kind of it's a much lighter version of what people call Louisville pizza, that kind of Wicks and Pelizzeri's thing, and it's just good quality stuff. It's been a while since I've had it. Sorry, Danny. but it is quite good.
Well, it's been a while since I had it, too, because I'll tell you, we have this segment of the show called Our Favorites of the Week. And my favorite, I got Danny's great cheesesteak sandwich. It's a $9.99.
Oh, you did when you went down there?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Lunch.
And it was really awesome. He serves it with some, you know, very potato chips and a drink. And, you know, it was like $9.99. And it's a good deal. It's hard to pass up getting a pizza, but I went for that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
My best thing I ate all week.
So, I'll go ahead and dovetail into that with the best thing I ate all week. Gosh, I had soup dumplings at Joy Luck. I mean, gosh, those are great. So they make the broth, they freeze it somehow, you know, in small portions, and they wrap them in, you know, this dumpling dough. I know very little about Asian food. That's I know how to eat it and enjoy it, but I wouldn't know how to prepare it. But then they steam it, and when they bring it out, you put it into a spoon, and you bite the dumpling, and the broth, the hot broth, flows out in your mouth. It's a cool experience. So that's definitely
when I have that, it will be my first time.
Well, that was only my second time, so you're not far behind me. But that's great. And so the drinks, you didn't have a favorite drink. You just resorted to some Bud Light this week, you said.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I went to Waterfront Wednesday last night, and the beer selection, I don't like dark, like porter beer, so uh-huh. I didn't see anything at the concession stand I was at. There was a zillion people down there, so I got a Bud Light.
Well, it works, man. It was, you know, it's refreshing, I'm told.
It's like water, only flavored.
And colored. My favorite drinks this week are easy. The new Rhymageddon rye from Corsair Distilling in Bowling Green. I got a bottle of it when I was doing some traveling recently. It makes a fantastic Manhattan. And wow, the tropical drank stout at Against
That's
the
not
Grain.
A typo, the tropical drank?
It is drank. It's a play on purple drank, which is maybe from a rap song or,
We're not cool enough for that.
Exactly. But to think that they made a sessionable, meaning, you know, low alcohol, light-bodied stout, it was fantastic. So, anyway.
Well, you always... you know, beat me out on adventure for the palate. So congratulations on that.
Good stuff. Go down to Against the Grain to get that. My guest this week is Griffin Pollan, and his story, or at least what we talk about with the drug problem in the local restaurant scene, is not a very happy one, to say the least. Pollan, as he talks about, struggled with addiction when he was a teenager. But he beat that after rehab and has worked at multiple restaurants since. And unfortunately, a recent death from a heroin overdose by a cook that he worked with has really made a lot of people step back and think, what's going wrong with this industry that we struggle with this so much? And he and I get into that and talk about the problem. Unfortunately, didn't come up with a solution.
Well, there's really not one. A lot of people are trying to come up with something, but I've talked about this before. We don't really understand the motivation of people that get into heroin, and I just don't have an answer. I don't think the police do. The treatment centers don't. They're just trying to keep their head above water.
Right. Yeah, it's a scary time. Well, we're going to move on off to our interviews and let you enjoy those. And please listen. Please visit us at eatdrinktalk.net. Please email us at rick@eatdrinktalk.net and steve@eatdrinktalk.net with story ideas, comments, however you want to be involved with our site.
And I just got to tell you, the quality of content on the site is going up. I actually wrote a piece that I thought was halfway good this week. Steve always does. And, keeping up with the news in just this one industry is really something. But we're doing our best, and we want to be the first choice for people when a story about a restaurant comes up or a story about a distillery or anything like that. Eat, Drink, Talk is going to be the first place to look.
Awesome. That's where we're going. On to the interviews.
Of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Shariat,
Kristen Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
Welcome back to Eat, Drink, Talk. My guest this week is Griffin Pollan, a chef who is busy right now working on opening one of his own concepts called Mirin, a noodle shop. But before we get into that, Griffin, talk a little bit about where you have worked in this town. You've been to a lot of spots, right?
I have. I've bounced around quite a bit. I've been at Cafe Lulu, Hammerheads, Rue and Rumplings briefly. I did Over the Nine in Portland for
a while. That's right. I almost forgot about that.
Yep. And most recently, I was out at Corbett's, which was great.
Disneyland of cooking tools, anyway. Absolutely. Kitchens, I should say.
Everything you could hope and dream for, and then more. As of right now, I'm not really doing anything. I've got a bunch of sort of independent projects that I'm working on, including opening up Mirin. I'm actually this week recording a pilot for a TV show.
No kidding.
Yeah, so got all kinds of things going on.
Talk about Mirin. What's that going to be like?
I'm going to sort of, I don't want to say it's a reboot of Rumplings, but...
Which was a noodle shop.
Which was a noodle shop, yeah. But it was basically only noodles. We're going to be a little more varied, but a little more focused as well. Not as many noodles. Three different styles of ramen. We're also going to do steam buns and banh mi's and just some other street food, Asian street food,
yeah,
small plate sort of thing, you know.
And why do you have a fascination for that?
I don't know. It's just the food I've always loved.
And the fact that there's none here?
Yeah, well, that's true.
Or limited.
It's limited. There's some good ramen around. I've actually been to Asia Teak about 5 times in the last 2 weeks because I didn't realize how good their ramen was.
Wow, I didn't either.
It's incredible.
Louis, sorry, buddy. I'm going to have to stop by now. Golly, well, that's cool. Yeah. And I know you and Ming Poo are fond of, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Trivan. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
In the south end
place,
of town.
Oh, that place is great. I just discovered it the other day. They have the best pho I've ever had in my life. It's amazing. You know, usually when you get it, you have your bean sprouts and your cilantro and your lime, and you've got to add and get the combination right, add your hoisin or whatever. That's not the case there. That's not...
You get it as they present it?
Yes, it's perfect.
Oh, got to get out there. Got to get out there. Sadly, the reason why Griffin is on the show today is to talk about, you know, a scourge of the restaurant industry, and that's drug use, or use of illegal drugs. Heck, legal ones, too, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And recently, the death of a local cook named Derek Coleman, who you knew from a restaurant briefly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was my sous chef at Rumplings.
That's right. The kid died from a heroin overdose. And when I say kid, as a 51-year-old, I can say that about a 23-year-old. It sent shockwaves to the local chef community, and you were one of many who talked about it on Facebook. You and I have discussed your own past struggles with drugs, which is one reason why I wanted to have you on the show today. Do you mind sharing some of your story briefly for context here?
Sure. I guess, you know, like sort of like any teenager, when I was 14, 15 years old, started, you know, drinking, smoking weed, all that stuff. That sort of spiraled out of control, though. I have what you would refer to as an addictive personality. Whatever I do, I go all the way in on it. If it's something you can be addicted to, I can probably be addicted to it. So I guess it really started with marijuana and alcohol, and then progressed to cocaine and many criminal charges for many different things.
And this is all before you were 17, right?
Yeah, it was. I guess in one way, that's good. I got it all out of my system. You know, I figured out that I can't handle that at an early age before, you know, well, I'm alive. That's
right.
That's one thing. And also before, you know, I could really do any irreparable damage to my life. So I went to rehab at 17 years old. At the Morton Center in town, uh-huh. Which was great. It was a good experience. And yeah, I'm now coming up on 10 years, no drugs.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah.
So that makes you 27?
Uh-huh.
So were you in the restaurant business when this was going on, or is this just a sideline when you were in high school?
Sort of. You know, I was just breaking into the restaurant industry at that point. I think I was cooking at Tony Roma's, which I don't know if you remember that.
Sure, after on Firstborn Lane. It's now the Brasserie Provence.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which, that restaurant was fun. But, you know, I never, since I've actually really been in the restaurant industry, like deep into it, not just trying to make money to do whatever, I don't really get involved in all of the drug use that you see. But it's really prevalent, and it's really hard to stop.
Well, how bad a problem is it?
It's bad. It's really bad. We've, I don't want to mention the restaurant, but I've had to pull a cook out of the bathroom who was shooting heroin between his toes on the clock.
Right.
Oh my gosh. You know, I had a sous chef who was doing meth out back of the restaurant. I had no idea. I was totally blinded to it. You know, normally you can tell. You can tell who's doing what. But sometimes you get blinded by their good qualities, you know?
Right.
And you don't see that they're falling apart.
Does it seem to be worse in the back of the house versus the front, or is it everybody's involved?
It's probably worse in the back, I would say. But then again, I spend more time in the back than I do in the front, so.
True. Why do you think this industry in particular seems to suffer from this?
I don't know. I feel like this is such a high-pressure industry. You know, everything's hot, everything's sharp. You're racing the clock every day.
You're not paid well.
Yeah, that too. you know, it takes a certain kind of person and a certain kind of personality to thrive on that and to love it. And I think there's something to be said for it being a little bit of a coping mechanism to your high stress at first, and then, you know, that's what these things do. They spiral out of control, you know, especially heroin.
That seems to be a problem that's really surged in the past year or so. Is it that applicable to the restaurant industry as well?
Yeah, a couple years. Past few years, really, two or three. I think, well, you know, you're seeing the aftermath of it now. You're seeing the kids dying. You're seeing people, you know, spiraling out of control, basically.
After extended use,
yes,
I would imagine.
But, you know, we've been seeing the use for years.
Is this something that, I mean, over the past 10 years that you've been involved off and on in the business, what was going on 10 years ago that isn't that, what was going on 10 years ago versus people doing heroin and meth now? I mean, was it just booze and pot or?
Yeah, I mean, for me, but, you know, at that time, I knew that I couldn't do drugs. You know, I can drink. I don't really know what you attribute it to. You know, heroin's always been a problem. It's just, I guess the demographic that it affects is changing a little bit.
Right.
You know,
it's cheap apparently.
Yeah, it's cheap, and I think you see. I read a stat the other day that something like 60-something% of heroin deaths are now, you know, inner city or suburban white males from 18 to 35 or something like that, where back in 1992, it was like 85% black males.
Right.
So,
right. It was a ghetto issue when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, sure. And you know, it definitely, these things change. They go through their ups and downs, you know. They affect different neighborhoods at different times. I don't think it's any more of a problem now than it ever has been. I think just it's affecting a different group of people, and so it brings a different group of people's attention to it.
Sure, absolutely. Now, what about alcohol? I mean, the abuse of that that's legendary in the business.
Absolutely.
Is that worse? Is it as bad as drug use in the business? Or
it's probably worse, but usually with less finality, you know, less major repercussions. You know, everybody drinks for the most part, and if they don't, you know, they have a drinking problem. I know a ton of chefs who are sober now, who for years just abused and they just can't do it anymore.
Right.
So I mean, it's just as big of a problem. It's just, it's not as deadly. you know?
I mean, how does a chef deal with that day to day? I mean, knowing that, you know, some of his cooks maybe has, some of them maybe selling, some of them maybe using. I mean, what's...
That's the risk of the restaurant industry, you know? And you try to help people, and you try to lead by example and do the right thing, but, you know, it's not always possible. Perfect example with Derek. We tried with him, my chef de cuisine and I both. We tried to help him out when he, I guess, halfway through. I mean, I don't want to put his whole business out there, but
right.
He started having trouble, and we tried to help, but it gets to the point where you can't help everybody, you know?
Right. To parents out there who are listening to this podcast and wondering about their kids, you know, a lot of kids want to be chefs, a lot of kids, you know, I don't know if they want to be bartenders yet, but anybody might want to get into this business and know that these are the dangers that lie ahead of their kids. I mean, what would be your advice to those parents to tell those kids to prepare them for what they might find in this world?
Oh, man. You know, I guess don't... I think the majority of... Maybe not the majority, but you see these kids who are very sheltered growing up. They're not aware of these things. They don't know that these things exist. And they sort of just dive all in on them because they always felt like it was, you know, Narnia. Like they couldn't, you know, I was never allowed to do this. I was never allowed to do that. I don't know what this is. So let's try it out. And then it all just spirals out of control. I would say make your kids aware of drugs and alcohol, of what they actually do. You know, my mom did child protective services when I was growing up, and she showed me when I was just coming out of rehab pictures of before and after of meth and heroin and what it does to your body,
right?
And you know, the damage that you just can never repair. And it's basically like, this is, if you go back down that road, this is how you will end up.
Right.
You
know? Did that scare you at that point, finally,
yeah,
when you were sober?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I didn't get it. I was doing, you know, I was doing an 8-ball a day. I was skinny, sure. Yeah, you know. But the harder stuff, the meth, the heroin, that's the scary stuff, you know. I get heroin, your body can just forget to breathe, even from just a little bit, and you can just die in your sleep, you know. Even off just a tiny bit can just kill you.
What about, no, I wasn't naive and I was a cook, but I, as I like to tell people, I was always too cheap and too scared to do drugs. And one of my favorite stories about the business, it's kind of a sad story, but it's still one of my favorites, was in 1985 or 86, Louisville had the biggest drug bust in its history. And I think they got in one net in a day 155 people. And two of the guys were at a restaurant where I worked, one of which was a cook, and who, for some reason, he didn't like me very much, but for some reason, months before, he had taken me aside and showed me this gym bag, and in it was cocaine. So, do you know what that is? And I said, yeah. He said, don't get into it. And then a couple minutes later, he blew his nose and showed me the bloody snot that's a side effect of that, and said, you see that? That's what it does to your body. Don't get into it. Well, months later, he got net. You know, he was caught up in this whole thing. And I come into work that afternoon. I and my best friend, Richard Lewis, and our chef, Dominic Ceratori, who's now the owner of Ditto, said, come on, fellas. Got to get ready fast. Mike got hauled into that big drug haul this morning. Divide up his knives and get to work. And that's part of the business. That's how we look at it. We're like, all right, somebody just got in trouble. Let's move ahead. What's the possibility that the restaurant industry should be looking at this, trying to stop it somehow?
Yeah, I don't know what you can do. You know, there's the Healing Place does a great event, I think yearly.
Does it involve culinary folks? Mm-hmm. Or?
It's called 86 Addiction.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a cool event. Right. I wasn't able to be involved last year, but I'm going to try to be this year. You know, there's some things that you can do, but ultimately, you know, service must go on. Whether the guy is stoned or drunk or whatever it may be, if he's got to go, somebody's got to pick up his, you know, his slack. Service can't stop.
Do you think that screening? I mean, if the restaurateur takes that step to say, I'm going to do random screen, I got to make this a safe place. Is that possible?
I don't think it is. I don't think you would have any employees because what do you what do you screen for, you know? Like, are some things okay and some things aren't? You know, like, if a guy smokes weed on his off time, like, you know, so be it. That's fine. You know, I guess. I don't see that it's particularly harmful. Others might disagree with that. But, you know, do you just say, do you have a firm stance, no drugs? Or, you know, how do you... I don't know that...
It's a Pandora's box.
Yeah,
to start something like that's what you're saying.
You know, if yeah, I don't know that it wouldn't work. Maybe it would.
I don't know.
I personally try to hire people who are dependable and mostly clean. you know, if you drink or whatever, that's fine.
Just don't do it on the job.
Yeah, don't do it on the job. And
right.
You know, if it becomes a problem, let us know. We'll try to help you. Or, you know. Yeah, I don't know about...
For an industry that's so amazingly charitable to countless causes, it would seem that that would be a great place to start. And I guess organizations like Apron, you know, or have that motivation, and maybe they could tie into others maybe to help. I don't know. The fact is, we got a big problem on our hands in this business.
We do have a huge problem. If I knew how to solve it, I would have solved it already, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, you know?
Griffin Pollen, thanks for your candor and thanks for being on Eat Drink Talk.
All right, thanks for having me.
Garcon, I think I'll have another.
And today we're at a place that the sign on outside says it's famously local. I'm with Danny Mack of Danny Mack's Pizza. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, you've been you've just been here since the end of April at Melwood. How is the business going so far?
It's real exciting. Sales are starting to grow. The word's starting to get out. We're starting to meet some of the neighbors in the Clifton area. They're visiting. Some of our old customers are coming by, checking it out. It's really exciting. Every day I feel kind of blessed walking into this beautiful place.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite a departure from the old place where I met you on Clark's Lane.
Oh yeah,
that was some years ago.
Yeah.
Did you have tables there?
I had two tables.
Okay.
In a carryout lobby, pretty much.
And you got, and that's basically how you got started. You just have I don't know. Did you have just a love for pizza and a way to deliver it, or what?
Yeah, I've been a cook all my life. Growing up, and I always wanted to work for myself like anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there was a niche somewhere that I could probably fit in on the value and the taste of our pizzas, and I think I hit it a home run pretty much on our little niche on what Danny Mack's Pizza is, and lots of people are really enjoying the food. And
okay, well, you know, you went from the Clark's Lane location. I know at the you were in Germantown after that.
Yeah.
And that location is it still going, or?
Yeah, we're still inside the Amvets Post number 9 on Shelby Street. We
okay.
moved there probably 7 years ago after opening on Clark's Lane, and I really fell in love with the place. And we're hoping to do some bigger things in that area, hopefully to start delivering. We feel like that could double
okay.
our sales and reach more people.
Well, this is a big step up, though. This is a pretty big space here at Melwood. You've had entertainment going on, and I guess the thing that stays the same is the food, right?
Yeah, the food's the same. I actually feel like our upgraded kitchen with some better ovens have improved the quality of the food, and some of our old customers are saying the same thing.
Okay, well, I'm going to test you in just a minute because I got a sandwich in there cooking. That's going to be pretty good. But you've taken some chances. I mean, pizza is a very competitive business.
Oh, yeah, especially here in Louisville.
And how have you approached that? Because, you know, I guess you've got to make enough sales to compete with the Papa John's and the Little Caesars and Pizza Hut's, those big chains, and then there's a lot of independent restaurants too.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard road. It's been a long, hard 10 years, and like I said, I feel like we picked a good quality. We're giving out good quality food for a good price, and we hope that just the word of mouth keeps spreading. And as our, we might have to sell more pizzas than some of the chains to make our money, but
yeah.
We think it's doable.
But you keep your pricing competitive, I guess, with that?
Oh, yeah. We keep our basic cheese pizza at $7.99. It's $2 a topping. Some of our specialty pizzas are $15.99. So I think that's a good price. It's probably even below some of the chains, except when you get into the coupon battles. But
yeah.
I'm not really trying to fight against the chains. I think our food's a lot better.
Yeah. And you come over here right from Germantown into this spot at the Melwood that is, honestly, others, you know, there's been a lot of businesses that have come and gone from here. You must have had some special feeling about this place.
Yeah, I took on a partner to do this, and a year ago we looked at this place in the courtyard, not this exact location, but it just didn't feel right at the time. There was a lot of money that would have to be involved in adding bathrooms and everything, and it just didn't seem right. Well, here this year, we found out this location that we're in now was going to come available, and it just seemed right, and it's got a little vibe to it. We think that this place could easily become a venue if a restaurant stayed open when people need it, and that's what we're going to do. We're open 7 days a week, open for lunch and dinner. We're hoping to start delivery soon. I think that's something that some of the other restaurants maybe had trouble with.
Yeah.
They couldn't stay open.
Well, I'm sure it's challenging, the hours, and but they do have some big events here at the facility, so I guess you'd get some excess from that.
Yeah, not all the time. I mean, it's a mixed recipe. Sometimes on the weekends there's lots of weddings, so the parking lot up on top of the hill by the courtyard gets full, but there's plenty of parking down the hill, and we do see some extra foot traffic. It's definitely good for advertising, and we've been noticing some of the groomsmen and bridal parties before the wedding, they're sneaking in to have a shot or a beer before they go get hitched.
Well, sometimes you need that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic. Now, you actually, in your personal life, got married recently. How'd that come about? How do you fool somebody into doing that?
I've known Libby for about 4 years now, and I just really think she's mine, and we decided to get married. I proposed to her last 4th of July, and man, it was a hard road getting everything organized and opening a restaurant, working full time, Libby organizing the wedding. It was just a lot of
that's a lot going on. Where did it take place? Where did you get married?
We got married in our neighborhood in Schnitzelburg at Emerson Park, and then we partied a little bit with our family and friends at our other location inside the InVets Post.
Okay. Well, that's very cool. Because you're a local guy, you've always been here, and you really like not just Louisville, but the community inside.
Oh, I love the community. I grew up in the Germantown Schnitzelburg area at St. Joseph's Hospital, and then I went to school at Armand Lasorles. Went to St. Ag's, played for Germantown baseball. And I've helped with the community with their neighborhood websites, and I got a lot of pride where I live, and I'm hoping to do some things up here in the Clifton area. I think it's what they're calling that, Clifton Heights.
Yeah,
is this area? But I'd love to get to know the community here and get involved, just like I did over in the Germantown area, and maybe this. Maybe this courtyard in the Melwood Art Center catch on a little bit more.
Well, it's certainly a good setting, go-to place. It's beautiful outside today, and you've got outdoor seating, indoor seating. and a bar.
Oh yeah. Right?
So it's new for you. I don't think you ever had at the other place. You have this big karaoke contest coming up.
We're organizing a karaoke contest. It'll probably be about I think 6 weeks long. We'll have we're doing karaoke from 9 to 12 on Friday and Saturday, so we're going to work with that, and we'll have a winner each night, and at the end of the event, we'll have a championship with 12 singers, and we'll probably give away like $200 in cash to the winner, a $200 gift certificate for Danny Mac's Pizza, and we're trying to do runner-up, gets a crack sticks for a year.
Crack sticks. Now, that's a menu item you don't see anywhere else, right? Tell me what that is.
When we started Danny Mac's Pizza, we really wanted to have good breadsticks, so we were soaking them in garlic butter and lots of Parmesan cheese, and people just loved them. They started talking on social media about crack bread, and then everybody started saying crack sticks, and all of a sudden, every phone call I was getting was like, hey, give me an order of them crack sticks.
Well, and you got some other innovative things you've come up with here, because this isn't just a pepperoni and sausage pizza place, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the other things you've come up with over the years.
We've developed this cheesesteak in front of you here. I know.
Yeah, it just showed up. It looks good.
I know it's hard for you not to be eating it during this interview, but it's really caught on. We had to raise the price a little bit because our meat costs went up a little bit through the years. But at $9.99, I think it's one of the most hearty, delicious cheesesteaks in the area. I don't get around too much, but that's what people are telling me.
There you go. All right, so you've got that and all the great pizzas. I know that. What's special about your pizza? How do you stand out from all the other pizzas you can get in town?
I think we're cooking the pizzas real good. We made sure when we were developing our pizza that we used a good whole milk, mozzarella provolone cheeses. We have a really good sauce. We didn't try to, skimp on toppings. We're using, quality vegetables and meats. I think when you put all that together in the right way and give the consumer a good deal, it's a good recipe for, people enjoying your food.
There you go. Well, it looks great. I can't wait till we get done here. I'll start eating. But I want to ask you one last thing about you were talking to me about how the challenge of getting good help, getting people to serve and cook and all that. What all are you doing to make that happen?
Well, the first thing is this is a new concept for us. We've always been pretty much carry out and dine-in. We've tried delivery in the past, but this is our first shot at a full service. So we've got servers coming to the table, getting the word out to get people to come in and fill out applications. It's been a challenge for us. We put ads on social media and in Craigslist, and you would think you'd probably get 50 or 60 applications in to choose from and then kind of thin them out and get what you need. But I think we started out, we only had like 12 applications. And we took on some college kids that won't be here too long. But we're all trained up and ready for business, but we still need to reach some more workers. Especially delivery drivers. We're wanting to add delivery as soon as we can at both locations and get more servers ready for when these college kids go back to college.
Well, it sounds like it's good business when you need more help. So that's great. We got to wrap it up here, Danny. Any good karaoke? Can you say you've seen some talent in here on the karaoke yet?
Yeah, there's talent. There's
you have a go-to song?
I sing Teddy Bear from Elvis sometimes. That's probably my go-to, but I'm trying to learn a couple more.
Very good.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.